Welcome to Component 4, which is titled Introduction to Information and Computer Science. This is Unit 2, entitled Internet and the World Wide Web. You might wonder why this material needs to be covered when it seems to be ubiquitous. The Internet and the World Wide Web are known by everybody, it seems. And yet, many folks don't understand its implications, its origins, how to use it, its advantages and disadvantages. Those are the topics that we'll cover in this unit, and I hope that you enjoy the course. Our unit objectives include gaining the abilities to define the Internet and the World Wide Web, understand how to connect to the Internet and the various options available to you through your ISPs, including IP, addressing, DNS, domain names, and then the fees associated with Internet access. Searching the Internet, filtering results, and evaluating credibility of results. Internet security and privacy concerns. Ethical considerations through the use of the Internet. And finally, online healthcare applications and associated security and privacy issues. And this will include a small discussion about HIPAA, which is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. Let's talk for a moment about the organizations that connect us to the Internet. Internet access providers connect users to the Internet, and these are commonly referred to as ISPs, or Internet Service Providers. Access to the Internet revolves around the use of ISPs, and they're organized as local, regional, and national providers. Local providers connect to a regional provider, and then local providers might only work in a limited number of cities, or even perhaps one city. Then, regional providers connect to national providers. Regional providers usually operate in parts of or a number of states or provinces. Finally, national providers provide high-speed data transfer amongst themselves to provide a robust, redundant system. In fact, a national provider provides connectivity to every other network on the Internet without needing to pay for it. It stands to reason that since ISPs must maintain equipment and pay salaries, they provide Internet access for a fee. Fees are based on the type of service available and the desired speed that you would like, for example, if you were a subscriber. Dial-up is available almost anywhere in the United States, but it's very slow and not useful for today's web. Cost is approximately $10 per month. DSL is much faster than dial-up, but it's not available in many locations. DSL is really dial-up with good copper, and so that means that the telephone company or your ISP is able to speed up that Internet connection. If you have DSL, it should cost approximately $50 a month. Cable is usually much faster than DSL, but it's only available where cable companies have installed coax cable in streets, and the cost here is somewhere around $60 per month. And as you're probably aware, ISPs usually provide the equipment required to connect to their service for purchase or for a monthly lease fee. This is known as provider equipment. Dial-up connections require a modem on the premises, for example, at your home. A computer connects to the modem, and the modem connects to the ISP's wall connection, which provides Internet access, as I mentioned previously. DSL connections require a DSL modem and connect similarly to dial-up. Cable connections require a cable modem router and, again, a connection that's similar to dial-up. Private networks also have their own equipment. Your private, which is your home or business network, usually is made up of computers, laptops, wireless access points, and switches. All of your private devices can connect to your switch, with the switch connecting to the ISP's equipment via a network cable. With this setup, all private devices can access the Internet and share the same Internet connection. Keep in mind that with this type of a setup, if you don't have a fast connection with your ISP, then everybody will have a slow connection to the Internet. Now let's talk about leasing an IP address. ISPs lease IP addresses to subscribers. Your private, again, this is your home or business network, usually utilizes a private IP address range. The ISP typically leases your location one public IP address. As an example, if you have a cable connection, then you have one public IP address that is part of your cable fee that you pay each month. And this would be a public IP address. The ISP's equipment is provided with that public or that leased public IP address to connect to the ISP's public network. The ISP's equipment is also provided with a private IP address to connect to your private network. And then in this case, the private IP address that is associated with your, for example, cable modem router must be in the same range as the other devices in your network. While we're talking about leasing IP addresses, let's differentiate between a dynamic and a static IP address. In this case, we'll talk about dynamic IP addressing. The ISP's equipment is able to translate addressing between the private and public networks. In other words, the private IP address and the public IP address that must be used to access the internet. ISPs generally provide you with an address, an IP address, that may change from day to day. This is the typical leased dynamic IP address and is included in the monthly fee, as I mentioned. Now, most home IP addresses are dynamic. If you reboot the ISP's equipment, for example, your cable modem router, it may boot back up with a different IP address. And to folks like you and I, this really is not important, unless you do work that requires you to possess an IP address that does not change. If you require the use of an IP address that does not change, for example, if you do network administration from home, then the ISPs can lease an IP address to you for the duration of your contract. This IP address, which is a static IP address, will not change. Most websites use static IP addresses so that their domain name will be reliably mapped to one IP address. You imagine if your domain name, the White House, www.whitehouse.gov, had a dynamic IP address that constantly changed. This would mean that the world's DNS servers would have to keep track of that change. That would be pretty tough to do. ISPs charge more each month for static IP addresses, as you imagined. And the charge ranges from, it sounds strange, but it's true, from about $5 to $100 a month, depending on your provider. As you guessed, ISPs are glad to lease one or more static IP addresses to your home or business because they make money off of offering you this service. ISPs also provide DNS services. They provide a first level of DNS servers so that you can get quick resolution each time you do something on your browser. ISP DNS servers connect to global DNS root servers for help when they can't resolve a name to an IP address. Using an ISP's DNS servers makes for a speedier browsing experience, as you can imagine. Now that we understand the origins of the Internet and the World Wide Web, and we've talked about ISP connecting to the Internet along with IP addressing basics, let's now turn our attention to searching the Internet. Search engines search web pages for information using an algorithm. An example of a search engine would be Google. Information includes keywords and other information found on web pages. Note that a search engine is not a web directory, which is a site that manually lists sites by category. As an example, the website Craigslist offers a web directory when you initially view the site, and it also has a search engine, so you can see the difference between the two. If you have a moment, you might take a look at Craigslist's website and examine its layout once you get to your state. There are a number of search engine providers, and I've just listed the top four that I could think of. One would be Google. The other is Bing, provided by Microsoft. Yahoo. Note that its name does include the exclamation point. And then Ask. If you can think of others, you might present these in class. And this leads us to the question as to how search engines function. Search engines gather data, as you imagined. Web crawler programs are programmed with proprietary algorithms to gather HTML coding on web pages. Search providers own proprietary algorithms that provide distinct search results. In other words, Google's algorithm is different than that of Bing. And it's a closely guarded secret because each believes that their algorithm, again, which is a secret, is better than anybody else's and provides the results that people would look for. An algorithm is a set of instructions set out logically to solve a problem or reach a desired goal. And as I mentioned, some are better than others. And so, as I mentioned, search providers use crawler programs to analyze web pages. And they use their algorithm to do this. Then, the gathered data is analyzed and indexed and used to provide search results for folks like you and I. The indexed data is stored in a database and is owned by the search provider. If you'd like some information on Google's crawl process, take a look at the slide notes for this slide. You'll see the URL to Google's explanation. Search engine software searches its indexed data based on your search criteria. There are a number of ways that we can use a search engine. First, we can search using a phrase, and this is known as a query. In this case, the engine analyzes its indices, looking for pages that most closely match what we typed in. For example, type, "What is the internet?" as shown here on the slide, without the quotes in a search line. And then, after you click to do your search, select the Wikipedia entry near the top of the page. You can also use a wildcard in your search phrase, and the wildcard is the asterisk. Searching for search engine list 20 asterisk, again without the quotes, returns websites listing search engine rankings for the years 2000 through 2099. Notice that when we list in our search engine phrase 20 asterisk, we're saying that the word has to start with 20, and it could be any number of characters after that as long as it starts with 20. If you'd like to open up your search engine and try this, you can look at the rankings of search engines through those years. To get the best search results, though, you really need to learn to use what are referred to as Boolean operators. And these are the words and, or, and the word not. And what these do is restrict or even augment your search phrase. So let's look at an example using the word and. Searching for cardiac and arrest, again without the quotes, will list web pages containing both words, not one word or the other. Although if you use most search engines today, they will start out with cardiac arrest, and then they will, once they exhaust that search, then they'll list cardiac and then they'll list arrest. If you search for, or if you search using the word or, for example, cardiac or arrest, again without the quotes, this will list web pages containing either word or both words. This takes us to the not keyword. Searching for cardiac and arrest, not flu, again without quotes, will list web pages containing cardiac and arrest, but not the word flu. And so you see that you use the word not to restrict your search results. Web search tips include the fact that web searching is not case sensitive. For example, search for information related to the state of Oregon, capitalize the O in one search and then put it in lowercase for another. Be specific. Don't search for the word car, which is a generic noun, when you could be more specific by listing the make, model, and year of the vehicle you're searching for. Use short search phrases of 2 to 3 words when possible. When searching the web, oftentimes less is more. Searching with phrases in quotes restricts the search results. Let's look at this in a little more detail. If you type in your search engine line the phrase Phantom of the Opera with quotes, then this search will return web pages that contain that phrase and that specific word order with all of those words. Searching for Phantom of the Opera without quotes will return web pages that contain the words Phantom and or Opera and so on in no particular order. And so what does it mean when a website is shown at the top of a search results list? Well, it means that keywords found on the website by the search engine crawler closely match the phrase that you used when you searched. Popular websites, you know, those that are visited most often by people and devices that use the internet, match your search phrase. And as a side note, paying sites may appear at the top or side of the page very close to the unpaid-for search results. Oftentimes, the paid-for search result will be in a box, in a colored box, or have a special font to it. If you click on that paid-for result, then the owner of that website typically has to pay the search provider a fee. For example, they may pay a penny per click or something along those lines, and then pay more if you visit the site and then purchase something. Let's change gears and talk about internet security and privacy concerns. First up, why should you be concerned about internet security in the first place? Well, your personal data is always at risk when you are connected to the internet, regardless of your connection type. If you're on dial-up, you're more protected than the others because typically you disconnect a dial-up connection when you exit the internet. Your checking account might be drained before you can do anything about it if your internet security, your browsing security, is violated, which means that your credit can be destroyed if personal data is stolen, or for example, if all of your money is taken out of your checking account. Corporate secrets may be stolen and sold to competitors, putting a company out of business and causing the loss of jobs. A current hot topic is smartphone security. If you lose your phone, could the finder access your finances through your phone without having to figure out your username and passwords? Is your phone encrypted? If you lose your phone, are you able to dial into a website and do something that's known as remote erase, which means that when you press the button, all of the information on that phone would be erased and setting it back to the factory defaults? Do you have virus protection software installed on your phone? All of these things are topics that you need to consider when you use the internet and then use your devices for financial transactions on the internet.